today on Rocking the Suburbs.
We tell the story of how a drummer became a lead singer.
What? No, there must be some misunderstanding.
All right, it's day three of Genesis Week. And before we get going here on today's subtopic on Genesis, I want to ask you a question, Kevin, unrelated to music or anything, but just because I haven't seen you in a while.
Okay.
And you may notice that I'm wearing, for the video, I don't know if you can see, I'm wearing the VCU.
That's right.
Shirt, you know, I'm representing. And you also have...
That's right.
Progeny at Virginia Commonwealth University, right?
That's right. I have a daughter as a freshman at VCU this year.
Also, shout out to Katie, who just brought us some...
Thanks for the...
cheese and crackers.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it here?
Yeah, sure. Put that right there.
We'll munch right on the microphone.
So, anyway, yes, VCU, right? Yeah. We're both VCU parents now.
That's right. I've been meaning to ask you, like, can she get a ride home, like, for Thanksgiving? No, no, I'm just kidding.
Potentially,
we got that worked out.
Okay. Well, maybe Mackenzie needs a ride home. So.
That's true.
Maybe she can bum a ride off of you. I don't know.
Yep.
One last thing on this. You lived in Virginia for a number of years. Now,
10
right?
years now. 11. Yeah. 11 years.
Yeah, right. So about the same as me. Mm. If you look up on the map, the distance from where we live to Richmond, Virginia, you think like it should be about a couple of hours to get down there, right?
Right. Never.
You always have to allow yourself 3 hours to drive down to Richmond.
Well, I also have a son who's down at ODU.
That's right.
ODU, which is even further down in Norfolk. So that also was a long trek. So we actually learned that early and it's really just about getting out of Northern Virginia.
Yes. Yes. That adds an extra hour onto the drive.
Painful.
It's insane. Yes. Okay. That's enough of traffic talk. this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan, and you heard from
Kevin Goff.
And then also with us is
Rob Gates,
who does not yet have a kid in college, but will in a
hopefully
few
years. In 5 years.
Yeah. 5 years. Hopefully. Okay.
I'm more interested in traffic week. When are we going to do that?
Oh, don't get me. I could do a whole traffic podcast, but no.
Radio guy.
Yeah.
I meant the band.
Oh. Oh, yeah. There you go. Of course.
You did, didn't you?
Absolutely did.
Totally went over my head, Rob.
Same here. When you say traffic. Okay. So we're talking about Genesis. And yesterday we went through the Peter Gabriel years. That's okay. You can eat some of the cheese and crackers on mic. That's fine. People won't mind. They know that we're, you know, we need some sustenance here. So Peter Gabriel years yesterday, today, the Phil Collins frontman years, right? So what happened here? Peter Gabriel quits the band.
Right.
And they tried to find another singer for a little while, right?
They actually put an ad in the paper, Melody Maker or one of the papers, and got 400 responses, of course. And I think the way they phrased it was that they were looking for somebody that could handle acoustic sensibility or something.
So Brian Johnson would not make the cut there.
definitely not. And, you know, they went through this whole audition process and all these different things. And I think after about 20, they were just kind of like, well, maybe Phil should do it.
Yeah. I mean, they knew he could sing, yeah. Right? And I guess probably the biggest hangup was, well, you're playing the drums. Like, we don't want a singer who's behind the drum kit. But eventually they just were like, he's the best singer for the job. And so we'll work that out.
Right.
And they did. They brought in a touring drummer so that they could.
Right.
Do that, but yep. Anyway, so
it did work for the band, by the way.
It did. I mean, there are some occasions of, yeah, but you know, he wasn't the only singer in the band. I think that was
that's true.
The difference. Yeah. He didn't have to carry it full time,
right?
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Good point.
I mean, yes, there have been occasions where drummers have been singers in bands, but it's tough. That's a tough thing to pull off.
The only other one that's where the drummer didn't sing all the time was Night Ranger.
Oh,
I can think of it anyway. But Triumph, remember the Canadian Triumph? They had a
they had a
the drummer was I think was the lead singer.
Yeah, the Romantics
stunk.
Oh, yeah.
The Romantics, What I Like About You, that was sung by the drummer, but he didn't sing all their songs.
Okay.
He just happened to sing their big hit song. Yeah. Yeah, there are other cases. I mean, Don Henley and the Eagles.
Yeah.
But true. Again, not the only singer in the band.
And Dave Grohl, he never sang when he was in Nirvana.
Right. So. That's right. And so then, but that's a good example. Mm-hmm. When he goes on and does his own thing,
yep.
He goes out to the front of the stage.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So the first Phil Collins album was called A Trick of the Tail, 1976, right?
Right.
So why don't we just press play here on the opening track?
Yep.
Okay, so honestly, that doesn't sound that different from what we heard yesterday, right?
You're absolutely right. And I think that was intentional. I think you don't really hear the Phil Collins voice just yet. You can tell it's Phil Collins, like if you're familiar with his voice. But I don't think he was somewhat subdued on this.
I think you're right. Well, what I find really interesting in listening to this older stuff is that their voices weren't that dissimilar, Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins.
Yeah, I think that's probably why they decided that this could work. And I remember reading somewhere where they said that most people didn't even notice that there was a change.
No.
Like if they hadn't studied who was in the band or was like the true fans would know, but. Those that had just discovered Genesis and were casual fans didn't even notice that it changed.
Vocally, no, but the music definitely changed. So this sounds a lot more like traditional prog rock.
Mm-hmm.
Much heavier than anything that we've heard.
Less folky, yeah.
Less folky, much heavier. There's a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
The drums, I think, actually stand out in that track particularly, and they still play that one live. Or I keep saying that like they haven't toured in 10 years, but my point being, until much later in their career, right, they were playing this song throughout. So
you're stuck in the 90s, right?
I am. it hasn't been as good since.
All right, so how did this album do? Like, did fans embrace new band?
I believe the critics were all surprised, is the best way to say it, that they didn't fail, that they didn't bomb. Like, this might actually work without Peter Gabriel. And maybe the band was surprised to it by it too, but I don't exactly know. I think that, you know, they went in with just like, we're going to do this. And they recorded their own songs. And if you look at like the titles of the songs, those kinds of things, it's not as, odd, I think, as some of the Peter Gabriel type Return right. of the Giant Hogweed or
right.
but also, I mean, they weren't exactly a super group
right.
with Peter. So,
right.
You know, bombing is relative sense.
Yeah.
They had a following. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they were doing reasonably well, right? And they had sort of a cult following, maybe. Right. But yeah, you're right. They weren't a big selling group even by this point. That song, by the way, was called Dance on a Volcano. Can I just play a little bit of another song on this album? Because, again, this is all stuff I'm not really familiar with. First off, I want to say they don't have any crazy long songs on this album. There's only 8 songs total, and the longest one is 8 minutes. So, I mean, that's on the long side, and there's a 7.5, but most of them are reasonable length, I would say. But anyway, in doing some research on this today, one of the songs that came up, which I think was the first one Phil Collins recorded his vocals for on this album, was called Squonk, right?
It's a good one.
So actually, speaking of odd titles, right?
Yeah.
So I've never heard this before. I want to hear it.
This is a song that I actually have in my playlist when I'm practicing drums.
Okay.
I play this song.
Okay, now that sounds a little more like what I think of Phil Collins singing. It's a little more full-throated, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was, in terms of the songs on the album, that's less, less muted, I think, than the first one we heard.
So. But it also sounds a lot more like the Genesis that we definitely know.
Yeah, so it's already kind of peeking through here. Yeah.
In fact, I think that keyboard riff makes an appearance in another song.
Probably right, yeah.
Okay, so the next album after that was Wind and Wuthering, 1976.
Which was Steve Hackett's last album.
I wanted to ask you about...
Okay.
So, yeah.
What did Steve Hackett play?
Guitar.
Okay, so him and...
Rutherford.
Yeah, Rutherford was mostly playing bass, but...
And rhythm guitar.
And rhythm guitar.
Steve Hackett was the lead guitarist. Yeah.
Yeah, he was playing bass with his feet. Mike Rutherford was, I think, in a lot of ways. There were some
pedals.
Clever ways they were doing that. But yeah, Steve Hackett is sort of known and sometimes gets attributed for inventing the tap thing that Eddie Vedder is known for.
Eddie Van Halen.
Sorry. You're right. Eddie Van Halen.
Yes.
And supposedly Steve Hackett showed him how to do it. But I think that's urban myth.
Yeah. But yes, Steve Hackett was known as sort of virtuosic sort of guitar player, right? Yeah.
Definitely. I got to see Steve Hackett. He still tours today. Like, I saw him like 3 years ago at the Lincoln Theater in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And all he does is play Genesis songs.
Hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. He just plays them. Sometimes he'll sing. Most of the times he's just doing the instrumental versions of them.
So does he go all the way back to the beginning?
From when he was in the band. Like, he was there from about the same time Phil Collins was in, all the way up to Wind and Wuthering.
Yes. Genesis had an original lineup that was maybe like the first 2 albums or so, right? And then they brought in Phil Collins and Steve Hackett when they were trying. They basically got rid of a couple of guys who couldn't play very well, is my understanding.
Exactly, like Chris Stewart on drums. They all claim, like, he was a great guy. We really loved him. He was not good on drums.
Yeah, so they just need to sort of upgrade, you know? And that's when they brought in Steve Hackett. But so he was in from 71 to 76,
right?
Is what I have.
Yep.
But he left because he wanted to pursue his own solo career.
Right.
Which is interesting that you say that he just basically plays Genesis songs now, right?
It is interesting that now he, there's, again, he was bringing in musicians from Genesis to help him with his solo career, yeah, too. In a lot of,
what but, I read was that he was getting upset that his songs weren't making it onto albums.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely read that too. And, he was distracted somewhat by a divorce and things like that. So only bits like riffs they were using from him, but they wouldn't take his actual songs and put those on albums.
Okay. So the last Steve Hackett was Wind and Wuthering. And then after that was 1978. And then there were three.
Yeah.
Right.
and just a point about Wind and Wuthering, we don't need to play it. There's really no songs on there that I think stand out in terms of what you must play in terms of hits, that kind of, but it's a really good album, like from a Genesis standpoint. If you're not familiar with it, I'd go back and listen to it, but it is still very prog rock and, it's worth a listen.
So what do you think of, and then there were three,
I know one song that everybody knows, right, yeah, from that one. That and Wind and Wuthering is, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Like none of the other songs on there, but they had this one song on there that stood out among the others and actually became, I think, what their first hit.
Yeah. So I think this is obviously really important. So Steve Hackett leaves. They decide not to replace him. Mike Rutherford feels good enough about playing lead lines that he can, right, just do it all in the studio. And mm-hmm. Like I mentioned before, they can augment it with other touring musicians when they go out on tour. So really it's just three guys doing all these parts. And, but I think to a lot of fans, this is kind of the beginning of popular Genesis, right?
Definitely.
The three guys. And immediately you have a hit song that people to this day still,
sure,
really know and connect with, right? Okay, of course, that's Follow You, Follow Me, which was a fan favorite song, and it was a hit song.
Right.
Where did it chart at?
We can look that up.
I will do that. But the to me, there's two aspects here as to why they started to get hit songs. One was just musically, right? It became more accessible. But also lyrically. Like, Follow You, Follow Me, you know, it's got this basic sort of love song sentiment, and it's very easy to understand what he's saying. The lyrics are more direct. It's not like
bacteria in the carpet.
That's right. That's what I was going to say, right? It's not trying to be, you know, obtuse in any way. It's basically just, you know, a song that you can just understand immediately and connect with, right?
Right. So number 23 in the U.S. and 21 on the adult contemporary, in the U.S. Billboard 100 chart.
So it's getting top 40. Number top 40 airplay.
Number 7 in the UK.
Was that their first US top 40 hit? I'm trying to look it up myself.
I had that available earlier, but...
Yes, it was. It was their first top 40 hit. The only previous song they had that even made the top 100 in the U.S. was Your Own Special Way.
Yeah, and that was actually from Wind and... No. Yeah, that was from Wind and Water.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
The Follow You, Follow Me, I actually think the version that was on Three Sides Live also charted in some way. And they actually toured on that album because of it. And so that they put songs like Paper Late and some other songs on Three Sides Live, and but had the fourth side, I guess, was a few other songs.
Right.
That, yeah. Yeah.
But, all right. So I think to a lot of people, probably to young me, that's sort of the beginning of Genesis, right?
Yeah, sure. That's fair. Yeah.
That's a Genesis of Genesis.
Yeah. All right, so then what's after that? Duke. That was kind of a big hit record, right?
My favorite. Hanging on my wall in my office. Yeah, that one. Yeah, what were you looking at me for?
What office?
Album cover.
Oh, at home.
At home, yeah. My home office, sorry.
Yeah.
Had to clarify.
The dog's here with a squeaky toy, by the way.
No,
don't let that
me.
Distract you.
That's me playing, yeah, with the nice. Squeak toy. But Duke, yes.
1980.
That album, beginning to end, it just has a flow to it, a feel. There's something about the drums on there that just resonates with me. And, you know, it kind of bookends. You have Behind the Lines at the beginning, and then Duke's End and Duke's Travel at the very end. And those are the very proggy Phil Collins version of Genesis. But just... really good. Like that's the Genesis. That period probably is my favorite.
So Duke had their next big hit song, went to number 14. That was Misunderstanding.
Yep.
But there was a different song you wanted to play here, so let me hit that one. All right, turn it on again.
So yes. this is it. I mean, this is the beginning of the Genesis.
Yeah, you can see the, like, go watch the live DVDs of Genesis from this, and you can just see the fans are into it, and the band is, and they've made it. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, there's a lot of energy in that song, and I remember, I think they had a live video of this that played on MTV, and this song was also on Three Sides Live.
Absolutely.
And, it was... kind of like you felt that the band, there was a sort of excitement about the band at this point.
Definitely. Funny story about this song is that Peter Gabriel now and then would come and play with them live. He actually went back and played this in 82 with the band and actually played drums on stage with them, Peter Gabriel, and didn't understand the weird, like, time things in it, and made a comment that this is truly a Genesis song, is like, because I can't play it live.
But you could see this. I mean, this song fits on Abacab.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it.
Right.
It's in from that same, like, Duke and Abacab, I think, were probably part one and part two.
Well, and then ways. Genesis after that.
Yeah. Yeah, that fits in that.
I mean,
that's
kinda, all that.
That is probably my favorite period of the band, for sure.
So on Monday, we played Abacab.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the next album with that title, 1981. But I want to play quickly another song that was a hit song, because I think there's something really important with this one.
Good.
Okay, they have soul horns on a band that was a prog rock band, right? Yep. Like, that's about as far away as you can get from that, right?
Definitely.
It was the horn section from Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
Played on this.
Absolutely. And also played, I think, with Phil and his solo stuff.
Well, that has to be it, because right around this time was the Face Value album, right? Which had a song called Mist Again.
Right.
Which had...
Yep.
Kind of sounds a lot like this, you know, had a lot of the same elements and had the horn section and all that. And so I find that just really interesting that they really kind of embraced this direction, because this is about as different, I think, from the Peter Gabriel era as you can get. Although, interestingly, when you hear Peter Gabriel solo stuff and he's doing stuff like Sledgehammer and things like that, he's starting to move in that direction as well.
World music and other instruments, for sure.
There's a little bit more of a looseness in their playing, I think, there too. That bass line is sort of like really crazy and all over the place, and has some funk to it. And even the drumming has a little bit of looseness in it, right? It's not so rigid as some of their other stuff.
And if you notice on that album and the one after it, there's like this... The keyboards aren't quite as like of, it's more synthesizer cycling of,
it's more rhythmic
which
is kind of a new wavy kind of sound, definitely. A little bit
so I think this is the last 45 I ever bought.
Excellent.
That's because after that, so as a freshman in high school when this came out, and I've been buying 45s until then. And then after this, I started buying the whole album for whatever, whatever the band was. But I used to drive my parents crazy with this, because I used to rock this out in my bedroom and crank it up.
It's a good song.
And if I recall, the B-side of this single was also a very good Genesis song.
If we had to guess, what would you say it was?
I cannot remember.
Wouldn't Paper Late?
According to this, I don't even know how to pronounce this. Namananu / Dodo was the B side.
Oh, Dodo.
Yes, Dodo. That's right.
So Dodo was on Abacab.
Okay.
Which was about a bird, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
We never did mention that the song is No Reply at All. We didn't get that from the thing. But again, the direct lyrics, you know,
sure.
No reply. Like, everybody can basically understand what he's singing about.
Yep.
It's just a pop song.
Yep. Definitely.
It's such a good one.
Totally.
All right. And then from there, where do we go? After the Abacab album was the album that was just called Genesis, 1983.
Yep. And that album, I think, shines through with some of the keyboard stuff that's going on. There's a lot of melodic keyboard when you listen. We heard That's All a couple of days ago, but the, you know, there's just, it's more rhythmic, more poppy. I mean, in general, you have now start of the album had Mama on it, which is opener for Alive. like they did that from when that album came out till the end. They would open the shows with that.
Okay.
And Phil Collins singing that, like it was just him on stage and him doing that. And he shine this yellow light into his face. It's almost the same look you see on the cover of like No Jacket Required, where he's just his face. And it was a really cool way to start a show, basically. And then they go right into that. Abacata. Yeah. So, but
that's not a very poppy song at all. That's kind of a weird song.
Yeah, so definitely.
They were definitely going back and wanted to challenge the listeners a little bit more.
Yep. And then one of my all-time favorite Genesis songs is actually on that album. I think Rob is also partial to it as well. A song about ghosts that have a home by the sea.
By the sea.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll use that as the play out.
Okay.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Genesis was a big album. I'm just trying to look this up here. In terms of album charts... Let's go back here. And then there was, in the U.S., and then there was three, was number 14, reached number 14. Duke went to number 11, Abacab number 7, Genesis number 9. So, you know, still top 10. And then Invisible Touch went to number 3. And as we mentioned, had top five singles.
Yeah.
A huge record. That was 1986.
Yeah, and I would say that was definitely a Phil Collins record right there. Yeah, but.
Yes. And, you know, it has that kind of 80s production, too.
Definitely,
like, it definitely has that sound, that 80s studio sound.
A lot of his solo career, I think, was bleeding into Genesis, and they were letting it. Like, you'd hear the ballad song throwing it all away, and which is a good song, but, it could have been on the solo albums of Phil Collins just as easily, I think. So.
Yeah, I think they were smart enough to figure out
balance it.
That, this guy is making us a lot of money, right?
Definitely, yeah.
They were big both in terms of album sales and radio singles and touring. Like they would get, they were like stadium band by this point, right?
Right, definitely. And right up until when Phil Collins left the band, he was still doing the front man. He'd sing and then go play drums in the background, in between songs. Or, they'd do an extended part of a song. He'd go back and play drums for a little bit. Then he'd move back up front. And, at some point, he started having, nerve damage, from playing the drums.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it was actually attributed to, but the health issues to where when they did their reunion tour in 2007, he was still trying to play drums, but he said it was hurting him so much that he wasn't doing it quite as much. So, they always had support drummers, Chester Thompson, which was a fantastic drummer.
Right.
Play along with him. They would do solos, every night, that kind of thing. So, but it boiled down to, like, Phil Collins does not play the drums anymore today. Just did a tour recently, even solo, and he didn't even try. I think he was sitting most of the show, too, where he was singing, too, because he's just, his health is, his voice still sounds great.
So,
but
a couple other things I just want to say about this period in terms of outside of Genesis. So, of course, Phil Collins was putting out hugely successful solo albums in this period of time. Also drumming on other people's stuff.
Eric Clapton.
Eric Clapton, Howard Jones. Yep. He was the drummer on the Band-Aid.
Yes.
Song, the Do They Know It's Christmas song.
The Who? He did one of their... I'm sorry. He did...
Led Zeppelin.
He did Slit Skirts, I think, for...
Pete Townsend?
Pete Townsend, yeah.
And you're right. He was the drummer with the Led Zeppelin at Live Aid, right?
Live Aid, yes.
Yeah.
Where he played on both sides of the Atlantic.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was like everywhere.
Yeah, he was.
This period of time. And then the other thing, too, is who would have ever thought that then Mike Rutherford could form a side project and have like hit songs, right?
Yeah, that was.
These guys were just like gold at this period of time.
Yeah, definitely. And Mike Rutherford, I think he did sing a little bit, but not much, not lead. As much, And with Mike and the Mechanics, you know, he'd get with Paul Carrack and right. other artists, you know, and had some really,
like, I know.
One of the biggest hit songs. It might have been as big as some of Phil's solo stuff. So
I know.
Yeah.
These guys were everywhere.
Right. Yep.
All right. So tomorrow we're going to talk about short and long songs, yeah, the differences there, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Of Genesis. Okay.
Yep.
We'll get into that. Okay. Let's wrap this one up here. You mentioned one of your favorite songs is Home by the Sea.
Yes.
From the 1983 album. We will play out with that. If anybody would like to talk about Genesis, you can call the number 612-440-1984.
I missed it again.
You missed again.
Did you see what I,
yeah,
see what I exactly. did
there? Or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at suburbspod. All right, here we go. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Rob Gates.
Kevin Goff.
Kevin, I'll throw this one to you. How often should people listen to Rock in the Suburbs?
Every day.
Thank you for that. All right. So tune in again tomorrow. And here is Genesis with Home by the Sea.
Collins is a lot easier to say for some reason. But.
If you're an astute listener, you will notice that oftentimes by the time you get to Thursday or Friday of the show, that one of us in particular, I'm not going to name which one, sounds a bit different than he did on Monday.
Yes.